Well, welcome in to the News Made Simple broadcast. This is brought to you by the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet, where you can store your Bitcoin safely and keep it off the exchanges. Please, for the love of God, get your Bitcoin off of the exchanges because they are rehypothecating that and using it to their own advantage. And someday they're going to come to you and say, hey, guess what? We'll just keep it here. You're not allowed to withdraw it. So get it off, put it on a Bitbox. And also Movies Plus, by the way, I'm going to tweet about this, but the Bitcoin content on Movies Plus is literally, and we have four titles on there. And I think they're in like numbers 2 through 6 of the top 10 content that's watched on the platform. So, and not all of our subscribers are Bitcoiners, you know, so that's a good thing. We're orange peeling people. Keep creating content and bringing it, because orange peeling people one person at a time. But welcome to the News Made Simple broadcast for May 19th of 2022. And this is where we say the quiet parts out loud. We say the quiet out loud. And I thought about this. We should start a segment. We'll bring in from in the future, but like we should each have a quiet part that we want to say out loud, where we're kind of sick of things that we see happening, and be like, hey, like nobody's put like you kind of like a grind my gears type segment. We could, get into that where, you know, hey, stop shilling things like UST. That's what I want to say out loud. Where a lot of people were kind of saying without saying it. But anyways, so into the news. And Phil, I think you wanted to start off with, Powell getting reinstated at the Fed.
Yeah, I mean, it was going to happen anyway. And I think they've done this in the past with like Greenspan, but it's really just a political move, because Powell being hawkish with Fed policies is not politically popular. And so they just wanted to like, just grandstand, pushed off till the very end to make him look bad, because every other government in the world is basically suffering with a strong dollar. And basically it was just kind of like a grieving attack, I think. But he was confirmed, and he announced that there are no signs of stopping the hawkishness and that rates will continue to rise. And it was funny, I was just walking around on Twitter last night. There were some spaces going around, and just your typical finance bros crying in their beer and saying, oh, they're making a mistake. It's a policy error. This is just market sentiment, and they're expecting that rates are gonna keep going up. And that's why the Dow shit itself like 4% today or whatever it was. And they're just in denial. And they are basically not used to seeing a bear market, because arguably we haven't had one in the last 50 years, especially with the US Treasury. If you look at a like 50-year chart, it's been a bull market ever since. And that's starting to change because, again, as I've said countless times on this program, the Fed is not messing around. They're serious about just creating more dollar credibility, stability, strong dollar, and it's about between them and Davos.
So this is a battle. You think it's a battle between Davos and the dollar?
Davos and the Fed. And yeah, the Fed comprises of the banks, Wall Street, and arguably the commercial banks in Wall Street are the ones that put Jerome Powell in place, whether it was Jamie Dimon or whoever. But you have to remember that the banking cartel in the United States, all the commercial banks and the regional Federal Reserve banks, all 12 of them, they're all shareholders of the Fed. So they are like the stakeholder capital, but are basically, they hold the voting rights of what goes down. And what Davos wants to do is destroy that decentralized money transmission mechanism that is the Federal Reserve, and replace all banking with basically top-down IMF, CBDC distributed from the central bank of that country. And the commercial banks are arguably one of the largest lobbying groups in the world, or at least in the US, and they have a lot of leverage. in, I mean, a lot. They're partially responsible for the majority of infrastructure. I don't think it's mostly taxes. I mean, arguably that's just going to Ukraine for $40 billion or whatever the latest package was. So
I love how there's
the banks basically don't want to give up what power they have, and Davos is a direct threat to that because they are the ones allowing corporations to have as much power as the banks do. And so a strong dollar means a strong United States economy, which means the banks are maintaining their power, and they are off the reservation of the central banking cartel in the world, because what they want is MMT and America, at least American capitalism as we know it to the modern day and standard. They don't want to do that because otherwise they would be completely irrelevant and replaced. Sorry, go ahead now, Corey.
No, I was going to say, I love just with that tax bill getting pushed through, or the, you know, not the tax bill, the aid bill. You know, it was just like, oh yeah, I mean, it couldn't have been a better double standard whenever everybody was saying, oh, Elon with his $40 billion could end world hunger. And then like a week later, like the government's just like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, we'll just push that $40 billion out. It's nuts.
That's funny. I didn't realize that. Same number.
Yeah. It's like, oh, look, I guess the U.S. could, in theory, end world hunger. Oh, but that's not in their best interest. So
explaining it for the slush fund in Ukraine to have oligarchs take advantage of like this one last stride in that, you know, country that has been poorly taken advantage of for decades. Like, God bless the actual citizens that live there. They've just been kind of like economically raped and pillaged for decades. So this is kind of like the devotion and neocons kind of like last like hoorah trying to profit what they can. And they could have instead of just ended world hunger, apparently, according to their words and their numbers.
So explain to people. So Davos, other than a city in Switzerland, it gets thrown out there a lot. And I think people might be not always just like a brief 30 second what it is so that they completely understand.
Yeah. So the term Davos was actually coined by by Tom Luongo,
friend of the show and a friend of the friend of the Phil Gibson show.
Yeah. Two-time guest of A Boy Named Sue. Love to get him on again. Maybe me and Luke host his spaces or just have an interview and have him just give us an up to date. But he coined this, I think, like 5 years ago when he was basically seeing that there's starting to become a bifurcation of world powers. And it's really Davos is Europe. It's old European money, whether it be like the Club of Rome or like Rothschild or just old family money, kind of like very much like white ethnocentric, almost racist, just that kind of Straussian neocon like dominance by proxy kind of mindset. You might think of it as like European or like British loyalists. Those are the kind of like sleeper cells that might be in America. And Tom argues that really, Davos is comprised of the White House. So he jokingly calls the Biden administration the O-Biden administration because they really don't have America's interest at mind. It's really just like this whole time kind of like a European push and expansion for power as you have like the Federalists and Anti-Federalists from like the founding of this country. So the Anti-Federalists were basically, you know, we don't want to basically copy and paste what happened in Britain or Europe in general. And so I think this is just another form of globalism. So you can call them Davos, globalists, neocons. It's kind of like all in the same clump. And that's essentially what it is. So, you know, throw in the World Economic Forum, and it's Davos because that's where all these people meet. So, you know, Klaus Schwab's and you can also pretty much you can also sorry, lost my train of thought, but it's basically like old European money.
Go ahead. It's collectivism.
Yeah.
It's they want to kill national sovereignty. They want to kill individualism. They want to kill freedom. And they, all of the names you just spouted off all kind of play a part in it. Your World Economic Forums, your Klaus Schwab's, XYZ Corporation, like a
Luke, your connection's kind of shite, mate.
All of those people are just trying to implement collectivism, communism, whatever you...
Yeah. Yeah, so Luke kind of cut out there, but essentially, I should have just said it's communism. They're commies. They're old European, old money, white, collectivist commies that don't like freedom and self-sovereignty. And so they basically want to destroy the idea of nation states and destroy the idea of like nationalism and pride in a country. And they essentially want to cause mass depopulation and achieve their goal of having the golden billion, which just have a billion people on the planet, and have the golden 1 million or the high prestige rich oligarchs rule over them. So basically creates a neo serfdom essentially, where you'll own nothing and be happy in this great reset.
I thought that the Fed would be on board with them.
Yeah, so that's not the case because of the reason I explained where the decentralization of the money transmission mechanism is threatened by Davos. So Davos essentially wants to do a reverse Bretton Woods, where after the end of World War II, everywhere around the world was decimated after the war because America kicked their ass. And they also became the strongest industrial hub. So Europe basically wants to have that happen, but have the power, money, all that come back to Europe. And so the way that they do this is embarrass the United States economy and political actions and social actions the best way they can by passing progressive, ridiculous policies and making them embarrass themselves by the way they irresponsibly pulled out of Afghanistan and passing all of this, these stimulus bills like Build Back Better, which thankfully didn't pass, but it would have front loaded like $3 or $4 trillion out of the $6 trillion that would have been in it. And it would have, I think, been spent over 5 years. But, you know, the majority of that money would have been front loaded the first year and just destroy the credibility of the dollar. And so that's basically what their game plan is to bring back the economic hub and just dominance, have that stem out of Europe. But they also, at the same time, want to shoot themselves in the foot by damaging European economies. All the countries in Europe that are still a part of the European Union, they basically want to have them deficit spend and hurt the people that live there economically to the point where they bend the knee and cave and say, yes, daddy government, I want my CBDC sent to me into my central bank digital currency wallet from the IMF and just live like a serf and a slave in my pod. At the same time, they don't want to hurt themselves too much and they want to hurt, they want to hurt the American economy more because it's kind of a battle. It's a race to the bottom. Because if they hurt the European economy too quickly, then they're going to see capital flight, which we're seeing right now. But you're going to see capital flight leave the euro and go into the dollar because money moves where it's treated best. So they want to kill themselves slowly and they want to kill the American economy faster because that would just send like a market signal like, oh, well, my money is best invested in Europe and not America because America is embarrassing themselves economically because the, you know, 10 years, like at 5%, like I know it's not, but that's just an example. And they're passing even more like more pink-haired, silly, blue-haired, progressive policies and like gender reassignment laws in schools. And so that's really silly. That's even more out there than what the social policies are in the European Union. So just trying to enact silly things like that. They want to basically embarrass America more than Europe. So it is a race to the bottom.
Yeah, we're pretty embarrassing right now. So I don't think they need to help us too much.
It's kind of them help. They all the help has been from them, because you still have Davos inside the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And that is comprised of basically Democrats, progressives, this administration. And I think that's why you're going to see a flipping happen during midterms, because the people are actually being able to vote at the local level and stand up, and parents caring for their families and pulling their kids out of school and homeschool because they don't like what their kids are being forced to just learn because indoctrination. And you have Davos trying to basically deteriorate society from the cultural level. And you have people standing up, speaking out. If they don't pull their kids out of school, then they're trying to be louder at the, you know, parent-teacher conference or associations and be involved on the school board. That's just one example. And then you have people probably standing up against all the small businesses that were shut down during COVID. I mean, COVID was arguably a economic attack against the Fed, because if you have mandates that are being forcibly passed to have all these businesses closed down and hurt the economy economically, that was redundant, mm-hmm. and negatively affect the economy in the United States, then that would force the Fed to do just, you know, helicopter cash. And so, again, helicopter cash is just another example of them economically embarrassing themselves and destroying their credibility.
It makes me think of
that's why you have a bifurcation of people that are in power economically at the United States that want to maintain that credibility, like the banks. And then you also probably just have people with businesses like speaking out. So yeah. I think eventually, and of course you have jurisdictional arbitrage in states like Florida, who just were doing mandates for the first like 2 weeks or whatever and opened up, and other states like Texas, and people having the New York and the Californian and just the coastal exoduses to these states. And you're basically going to have almost a grassroots uprising of people speaking out. We don't want this bullshit. And it's not just a partisan thing. Like, people that are rational, that want the best for their families, be them Republican voting or Democrat voting, are really going to just vote in their best interest. And that is going to be, of course, a flipping of probably mostly rational Republicans now, you know, taking place in seats. And I think that blue and red line is going to blur if you have like Greg DeSantis maybe run a ticket for president, but he chooses someone like Tulsi Gabbard as his running mate for VP, because she has also been kind of like shunned out of Davos, because of course she's gone to those meetings too, but you know, she's very anti-war and whatever economic policies that she might want to pass, she doesn't really have any leeway as vice president. But for all the good things that she just talked about, I think you will be able to drag in a lot of people from both sides of the aisle to kind of vote that ticket. I think you're going to start seeing like a political revolution, essentially. And it's basically people standing up and saying that they don't want these Davos Build Back Better policies anymore. And they want to build back better their own way that is in the best interest of them economically and for their families. And to just have it basically based on what this country was founded on.
They should call it the rational party. Like the party of people that are like, I'm just going to look at this from a rational point of view and realize that we have some differences, but you know, like we can, there's a set of things that we can agree on, and like the freedom to do what you want as long as it doesn't infringe on my freedoms and vice versa. I think there's a large rational contingent in this country, in the world in general, that's just like, all right, enough's enough. Like, they, you know, they're already trying to roll out another, you know, thing to scare everybody and start locking people down. And I think people are just like, nah, like, it's fine. Like, go ahead. You can do it if you want. If you want to stay in your house, go ahead. But I'm not a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And if this doesn't work out and we don't see that like political revolution, then hopefully it's not like a bloody civil war. But I think maybe that's when you start seeing states seceding and you have the fracturing of America and we divorce ourselves from the federal government slowly but surely. But that might just be a pipe dream.
Yeah. As a young kid, I remember in social studies way back, God, I don't even know what grade it was, the first time I learned that states could secede. And I was like, what? Like, that's pretty cool. Like, I mean, yeah, you know, like, oh, you mean like if the big government gets a little out of control, like, I like that idea. That's a good idea. So yeah, it should get back to the, I tried to put to try to trap a lot of progressives with the whole Roe v. Wade thing going on. And said something like, you know, instead of like, we shouldn't have lawmakers or like judges deciding what you can do with your body, what we should do is have the ability to vote on a local level and decide with your voice what you get to do, which is exactly what repealing the law and the ruling on Roe v. Wade would put it down to the state level. And I tried to trap people. I got a couple people, I think, that were like, what? And then I was like, see, no, I got you.
State sovereignty is still a thing under the 10th Amendment.
Yeah.
And so
Luke doesn't understand that though, because he's from Australia.
Like, at a state by state level. I hope that's what we see by a state by state level.
Yeah.
Because people are starting to, I think, wake up to this finally.
Luke, what do you think of it? The state by state level in what you're seeing in California? Because there's no such thing as a red area of California, but Susie B DDS, our dentist friend, Susie meme maker, dentist extraordinaire, she posted a picture of the state of California, and it was like what people think they hate when they talk about California, and it was like the whole West Coast, and then it was like, well, what they really hate, and it was just like a couple dots, which is like LA, San Francisco, and
that's
Portland.
Exactly what it's like. That is exactly what it's like. And obviously, as an Australian, that's why I'm in America, and I will never go back to the Australian gulag. Because at least in America, yes, Davos can try to attack America's sovereignty. Yes, Davos can try to kill freedom in America, but you're always going to have these red states succeed. You're always going to see a Texas. You're always going to see a Florida say, yeah, you know what? You want to mine Bitcoin? Come to my state. I'll give you guys energy rebates. I'll give you guys freedom. I'll give you guys an escape from the latest scariant that the Davos people are pushing forwards. You can come to my state. And that's what I love about America. And just on that second point about California, I challenge you, Corey. I actually am in a little red spot in California called Orange County. And it is beautiful. Not a mask in sight. Not a vaccine mandate requirement in sight. It's beautiful. 30 minutes drive from the Mexican border. But you're 100% right.
What county is it?
San Francisco, LA. It's an absolute
Orange County.
And it, you're in Orange County?
Orange County.
Oh, well, I will probably be
red
coming out because I mean, you don't understand, pre-pandemic, I was in California like every 2 or 3 months. And I love it there. I love things about it. I would not like the state taxes if that's where I lived, the income tax. But I have a buddy that lives in Orange County. I might be coming back out in the fall.
Income tax. You have to pay me a visit. If they let me back into America after I go to El Salvador, I will be in California. And just on the point for anyone listening in about income tax, yes, that's horrible. But demand to get paid in Bitcoin. You get paid in Bitcoin, income tax is not a worry. So you can live anywhere in the United States if you're smart about how you structure yourself.
How obviously do you not do
financial
that?
Advice. You'd be very nice to your boss. It's a long one.
Thankfully, his signal's weak because this is not financial or tax advice.
Yeah, this is. So this is
pay me in Bitcoin, baby. Pay me in Bitcoin.
This is Luke getting audited live on air. So all right, so yeah, let's couple other topics to touch on was the Bitcoin mining. And...
Well, hold on. Speaking of El Salvador, let's just talk about how the Davos meeting is next week, and Bukele, president of El Salvador, basically had his version of Bitcoin Davos, where 44, I think. Central banking finance people around the globe came to learn about Bitcoin, and it was basically the one of the biggest fuck yous to the IMF and Davos as a whole. So I think that's pretty important. And since Luke is on his way to El Salvador, I'm curious what his thoughts are on that, if his signal will persist.
Yeah, this will have to be my last thoughts on this one, guys. I'm about to jump on a plane, but I think it's massive. You got 44 presidents and central bankers from countries around the world all going to El Salvador and getting orange-pilled by Nayib Bukele. I was actually looking at a couple of posts, and they were full-on making them download the Bitcoin Beach Bitcoin wallet, and they'll teach them how to send Bitcoin Lightning transactions. I think that's massive. I also think it's not just a couple of really small countries in Africa and Latin America. There was countries everywhere. Mongolia, there was... The president from Mongolia was there, Nigeria, Morocco, Madagascar. You had central bankers from around the world all getting orange-pilled by Nayib Bukele. So I think that's massive. And it's worth noting as well, they weren't just there for Bitcoin. I think this little trip has actually been planned for the past 2 years. It's just amazing that Nayib Bukele ended up adopting a Bitcoin standard only 1 year ago.
Yeah, that's nice to hear, because I was very skeptical to hear that it was just about Bitcoin. And of course, when you see headlines coming from places and like Bitcoin magazine kind of running with it, like, yeah, that's the rhetoric they're going to go with. It's not incorrect, but I think it was just, I felt like it could have been a little misleading, because it's not solely just about Bitcoin. I mean, this is the first time I'm hearing it might not be in the case, because yeah, I guess now that they planned this 2 years in advance, but it definitely helps that El Salvador's on a quote-unquote Bitcoin standard. But also, I still am of the opinion that El Salvador kind of did this to, you know, attract more capital, clean up their crime, which, you know, rightfully so. And as a smaller developing country, you are withholden to some IMF loan from the loan shark of the world, the IMF and World Bank, and there's really it's a death trap. There's no way of you really paying back that loan and servicing that debt, especially if it's not denominated in US dollars, which was their reserve currency. Now they have a buy currencyism. Wow, that was completely wrong and stupid for me to say, but you know what I mean. They use both Bitcoin and the US dollar. So yeah, it would only make sense to adopt Bitcoin if your IMF loans are denominated in dollars, which I am assuming that these 44 countries, I don't know if they were 44 countries or whatever, but
I think it was either 44 representatives or bankers from the 44 countries.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, odds are their IMF loans are probably denominated in dollars as well.
Think about
that. It wouldn't make sense why they would go to learn about Bitcoin and how they adopt it.
Who pointed out there was, I think it was Crypto Mags pointed out that there were 44 countries represented. Bretton Woods happened in 1944. Yeah. And I think there were 44 countries involved then.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's just maybe a little, I don't know if it's just an act coincidence or if it's like a, you know, if it was me, if I was leader of a nation of any size, I would be trying to set up things that were like little middle fingers to the powers that be. But I'd also probably get taken out and, like, you know, get railroaded at an election and get destroyed. But yeah, I think it's interesting. And I'm, you know, Peter McCormick just put out his first episode of his, you know, Bitcoin in El Salvador, you know, follow the money thing, which actually I think I just was emailing with him, but we're going to put it on Movies Plus. So you can check it out there if you.
Oh, that's rad. It's a documentary.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a documentary. Yeah. And he went down there to talk about, like, to kind of observe what happened during the first, you know, like Bitcoin becoming legal tender and all that kind of stuff. And to his credit, he actually was like, you know what? Like, he went back to talk to Bukele again to ask him some extra questions, because he went and like talked to, he went to like opposition rallies and stuff. And he was actually, people like hated him because they thought that he was like Bukele's buddy. And so like the people that were calling Bukele a dictator at like these like rallies and stuff were like, you know, like pissed at Peter. So
I'd like to know how astroturfed those movements were and how genuine they were from the grassroots level, or if they were like funded by Soros or some shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine.
I hope that's exposed in the documentary.
If they can, I'm sure they would, because there's some. But it is interesting too, because he was showing, he went to like a market and we were asking people about Bitcoin, and like they were like, I don't want it. You know what I mean? Like just the regular people. Yeah. And then he went to like a rehab facility that this guy had set up. You know, just seeing like the kind of like bad conditions. So it's, you know, as Bitcoiners, we tend to think like, oh, it's gonna, like, El Salvador is this beautiful country, which it is, and it's, you know, it's all perfect, but it's not.
Yeah,
you know, they need a lot of help. And it's not just, hey, Bitcoin's legal tender, it's gonna fix everything immediately.
Yeah, that's really cool and ballsy of Peter to actually reveal how people actually feel about Bitcoin, because like this has been my entire skepticism. Because I'm just sick and tired. Maybe I don't see it as much as I did, or maybe the concept of this was just too, like, turned me off too much. But I'm really sick and tired of the Bitcoin moon juice boys, you know, go up forever, Laura bullshit, because it's just a marketing tactic. Nothing against Luke and his essay. I think he's very rational. He has a very rational approach when it comes to this, and why ultimately everybody's like Bitcoin bullish for the long term. But I think it takes a lot out of someone like Peter to actually expose, like, hey, it's not actually like all butterflies and orange rainbows here in El Salvador. And I think that's great. It's a form of actual journalism of what's going on the ground, how people feel about it and their fears. But ultimately we know that that's just kind of a speed bump, if you will. It's a trial and error, whether it be the wallet, the Shiba wallet that they put out breaking, or people just not wanting Bitcoin at all because they don't understand it. These are just growing pains, and Bitcoin's going to have growing pains. It's barely fucking 13 years old. So
yeah, I mean,
good for him. I'm stoked to see that.
Yeah, yeah. And it I mean, you know, Bitcoin is so young. We like to think that it's in this perfect position, but we got a lot of work to do. I personally would be totally down with floating between 29,000 and 32,000 until the next halving. Like, that would be awesome.
That would be like a normal cyclical bear market, right?
Yeah. And that, you know, so this is actually that little thing I teased at. This would be the thing that the quiet part I want to say out loud. And I tweeted this, but everybody celebrating buying cheap sats is a coping mechanism. And I mean that with all love to everybody, because I even celebrate buying cheap sats. But yeah, I realized it in myself. I was like, no, it's a coping mechanism, because as much as we all want Bitcoin to go down in price so that we can buy it cheaper, or we wish we could go back in time, the reality is when Bitcoin hits $100,000, nobody is going to be sad.
Yeah.
we're all going to be pretty happy. So it is a coping mechanism where you're just like, you think you're like, yes, we're going, we're riding, it's going to happen. And then it pulls back and you're like, yeah, well, I mean, I guess I can buy more cheaply.
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny to think about because like people say, oh, the 4-year cycle is over. But I mean, if you think about it, maybe it's not, because like 2017, 2018, all time high. And really, I wasn't really paying attention then. Like it was just adjacent to me, but this was like pre even like libertarian minded Phil. And but yeah,
this
looking
is commie Phil.
I was never a commie. I was always like right wing leaning.
Yeah, no, which, I was joking.
Arguably, those people can be commies. Totalitarianism's totalitarianism. But
well, George Bush just said he, you know, invade a terrible person that invades Iraq. Did you see that?
I'm 75. Bear with me.
Yeah, bear with me.
Jesus Christ, dude.
Oh.
75. I didn't know he was that old, but time flies, I guess. Anyway, but like you, I mean, it's 4 or 5 years between each bull market, and that's the same duration that you had when it hit 64, 69. And granted, like arguably we had like 2 bull markets in that same cycle, because you had 64, then you had like a 6-month gap. I don't know how many gaps in between it was, but then you had like another half a year gap-ish where it hit 69. But still, that was like the bull market of that cycle, right? Because it was like 4 years or so after the halving. And then I think it would be reasonable, not too crazy, if we actually don't see another all-time high until 2024. And really, that's not that far off if you think about it, because we're like halfway through 2022. So we have a year and a half left, and it's just going to fucking like fly by. And then maybe you'll hit 100K, or maybe like it's a slow, gradual bull market to where we get, you know, maybe we hit 70 and then it's gradually grows. And then, you know, after the next halving, maybe 6 months later, then we see 100K or 150 or something. But I still think like the 4-year like cycle, like after the halving, I think that still holds up and it's going to continue. Like the volatility is definitely going to level things out a little bit, like we're seeing in this cycle. But I still think there's going to be like some, I don't want to call it merit, but just like same similar like pattern recognition, because I think the majority of the market that is Bitcoin is still accustomed to that pattern recognition. It's going to level out, and that volatility again is going to dampen, but you're still going to see a familiar-esque 4-year all-time high bull market kind of thing.
Well, here we go, Phil. I actually disagree with you on this one. Controversial Boom. Opinion. I think the 4-year cycle is dead. 4-year cycle is dead. That article that we did reference earlier, that has actually held up pretty nicely, the one that I published in November 2021. I said that you're going to see shorter and sharper bear markets, like mini bear markets. And I think in the article I said we're not going to see bear markets bigger than 65%. And the only time you would see a correction larger than 60 to 65%, it would be like a liquidation candle, like your 2020 COVID crash. And we are yet to see an 85% correction in the price of Bitcoin, because that, for me, that's what constitutes a traditional bear market in Bitcoin. We've had 3 85% corrections in each of these subsequent 3 Bitcoin bear markets that we've gone through the years. And we are yet to see 85% correction. I will happily eat crow if we go down to $10,000 a coin and we hang down there for the traditional 6 months that Bitcoin normally does when it forms a bottom. But we are yet to see that, my friend. So I actually think 4-year cycles are dead. And I also think volatility is going to rip people's faces off when it emerges. Everybody's having that opinion that you just kind of mentioned, Phil. Oh, the volatility is going to decrease into the future. I don't think so. And in that article, I essentially outlaid the case of how we're going to transition to hyper-Bitcoinization, and it's going to be with face-melting volatility. As you see, probably one of the largest supply squeezes and supply shocks in financial market history. And I think we're watching that right now. Coins are getting taken off the exchanges, and they're going to the hands of long-term holders. And I personally think that's nation states accumulating Bitcoin and buying the dip. But I will, I'll leave you guys with that little monologue. I got to jump on a plane.
Oh man, I just tweeted out that you and Phil were fighting, and now you're gonna go on an airplane.
No, Sorry, Luke, I still have yet to have you on my show to talk about that thesis. I think it's really interesting. And like, I'd be down to buy into it. I just want to hear more and like be able to open up that conversation. But no, that sounds awesome. I hope that's the case. I hope we do see like face melting all time highs going to a million, but time will tell. That's a rad argument.
We should do it while price is down as well, because I'm just as convicted as I was when I published that in November 2021. So I think that would be timely bullish hopium for anybody who's feeling a little bit bearish on the price of Bitcoin recently. And because there are still people focused on USD price of Bitcoin. Personally, for me, one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin, but there's a lot of people that might need a little bit of that bullish hopium fuel. So we should rip into that sometime soon.
So if you think it's the short cycle, I mean, then this is basically the bottom of the short cycle. And we, in like a couple months, probably be back up near the 60K range.
That's my opinion. That's my belief. If we break, like if we go, I think an 85% correction off the 69K top would take us down to like 11 or 10K. I don't think we're going there. And that's what a lot of people are expecting.
Not. Yeah, I don't think we're going that far.
I think we could see 20 at the lowest, but nothing beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, I put like orders in. It was hopium on my part. I put some orders in to buy at like 21. And then after a little bit, I was like, it's not happening. It's just, it'll never get that low. And
I don't know, man, if we're going to see like 8 or 9 rate hikes or whatever the hell it is, we're going to see markets bleed and people are going to fly to dollars, and just how liquid that Bitcoin is, you're going to see more dumps. Don't think it's beyond the possibility of seeing like that 20K range.
Yeah. I mean, the advice I've been giving out for everyone, for plebs, is that like right now you're in that time. So like if you joined like I did in 2020 and that's when you first bought, you know, maybe you were fortuitous and like me and got in at the right time and not at the end of 2020. I mean, even if it's still at the end of 2020, you're in good position. Anywhere in 2020 was a good time to get in. But
yeah,
you sit there and you look back and you go, man, 2018, it was only $3,000 of Bitcoin. Like I should have been all over that. And I think that this is where like the unit bias comes into effect, because mm-hmm. people are like, I can't buy a whole Bitcoin. But the way that you look at a whole Bitcoin now is how in 4 years people will look at a tenth of a Bitcoin. You know, they'll be like, I could have bought 0.1 Bitcoin for $3,000. Are you kidding me? Like, I'd give anything to buy 0.1 Bitcoin for $3,000. Because guess what? In 4 years, 0.1 Bitcoin might be worth $30,000. So like, you got to look at it that way. It's all about perspective.
Long time preference. Zoom out. That's totally right. Like, I think, Corey, I think you and I got it in at the same time. Like, I first like discovered Bitcoin, took self-custody at the end of 2019. But if you got in anytime in 2019, before the, I guess, all-time high in 2020, like you're up, you're not negative. If you got in that like, you know, sub 15K, like ever since then, you're not complaining. You don't have anything to bitch about.
Although I do think I actually might be in a couple of my portfolios, like with different companies, I might actually be underwater on some of them. Just because I bought all the way up to 69 and when it dropped, I kept buying.
Worth it.
Fuck
the companies.
I'm a long-term hodler. You know, I'm looking, as I tell everybody, money that you're not going to touch, like if you're getting into it, take money that you're like, you know what, I'm cool with putting this in my savings account for 4 years and just put it there and walk away from it. And, you know, when you do that, I mean, the real trick is basically you're pregnant at that point. You get pregnant with the idea of Bitcoin and you're like, okay. And you like start thinking about it. And then you're like, you start revisiting it more. Cause that's exactly what I did. I was like, all right, how much money can I put away, but also feel like, know that I'm not going to touch, but then feel like the burn. Like if it drops 50% in price, I'm like, God damn it. Like that was some money that I just lost. And I did that, and I didn't think it was that big of a deal, and I didn't think it was going to grow to the point where I'm, you know, have a podcast and, you know, have companies holding Bitcoin on their balance sheet. And yeah, so it just that's my recommendation. But like I said, it's all unit bias. And I think that's interesting that you could potentially manipulate the unit bias by, you know, just looking at it. You know, right now, Bitcoin's 30 grand. And you could have bought one Bitcoin for 3 grand 4 years ago. But guess what? In 4 years, people are going to be saying, I could have bought a tenth of a Bitcoin for 3 grand in 2022. And now a tenth of a Bitcoin cost me 30 grand. So just get your act together. Stop sweating the small stuff. I guess off of my pontificating, we could talk about the two other little items with the Bitcoin mining. China, even though they banned Bitcoin mining, Zero Hedge put out an article that they are still the second largest hub for Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, and I think that's just testament to they didn't really go anywhere. I mean, maybe they VPN'd that they're in like Ireland or Scotland or Kazakhstan or whatever.
They're underground.
But yeah, I'm still under the impression that it's the Chinese government just trying to keep it as hush-hush as possible, because essentially this is like the hash wars are... Well,
they're in trouble right now. China's in trouble financially, aren't they?
I mean, they always have been. I think that's been one of the the reasons why they do the Belt and Road Initiative to export their inflation like the U.S. does, but act like a quasi-IMF and give out loans, or not even give loans, just offer protection and take resources from these other countries that are being raped by the loan shark that is the IMF, and just essentially expand their national economic empire network throughout the world. And I think they also want to try to run away from the soft economic power that is American economic investment in China, because with that it's basically just like paper money manipulating Chinese markets. And so I think they want to embrace some sort of like quote unquote sovereignty. It's kind of weird to associate China with like a sovereign nation, but essentially under international law, every nation should be sovereign. But of course that's complete bullshit, because now we're under the thumb of rules-based order. But all that aside, I think China's always kind of been a paper tiger, but now if they're trying to cozy up with Russia, then they're trying to ultimately establish some sort of commodity-backed currency, or at least Russia is, and Russia's probably going to become dependent on some of the technology that China creates. But aside from that, I think this is kind of Russia and China and India and other countries in the region that are basically saying this to NATO, fuck you, NATO, to basically have their own great reset. Because who's great reset is it? This is something that Tom also brings up. Like, whose great reset is this when Russia is demanding pay for oil in either rubles or gold? So I've said this a few times, but Russia kind of forced the world on the gold standard, or at least a ruble standard. And I could see that ruble being a reserve currency of Eurasia, because more and more countries in Europe, despite the great reset and economic castration that Davos wants to do in the EU, you have, as I mentioned, people like Greece and others not following suit. And no one really ever stopped buying oil from Russia. They just laundered it through middlemen and not bought it from Russia directly. And so Russia is still going to be like their main energy producer. So it's just all hand waving and virtue signaling that we're going to have this green great reset. So I guess going back to China is, I don't think, lockstep with the WEF and the whole Devotion plan. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're just trying to build back better in their own kind of like game of like Go instead of chess, and like this long thought out strategic like century plus plan of how they're gonna operate.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. And then the other topic I wanted to talk about is enemies of Bitcoin, which there's plenty, but Ethereum and Vitalik in his little tweet thread. And then also kind of some Coinbase dumping. I forgot that was one of the other ones I wanted to talk about. But speaking of them, this is a great time to mention, get your coins off of Coinbase. Get your coins off of every exchange and get a Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. Go to shiftcrypto.ch/BitcoinMadeSimple and use the promo code Bitcoin Made Simple to get 5% off and take control of your keys. You know, it'd be a really, really funny thing to see what happens if everybody keeps withdrawing their keys, their coins off of exchanges and self-custodying them, because I think that makes the price go up if you're not selling it.
Yeah, I'd like to see that happen and see how well that works against the manipulation of Bitcoin markets with things like
rehypothecation and futures.
No, I mean like futures markets, like the manipulation that you see in gold and other commodities as safe haven assets are basically manipulated and arguably attacked this past week as the Fed released their announcement that no signs of stopping the hawkishness. And so I think this was probably just a paper market manipulation attack on those commodities like gold and silver and Bitcoin, because where are you going to run to? And I think it was just a way to scare retail away and have, whether it's people on Wall Street or nation states, accumulate, because this is like their self-inflicted manipulated bear market, arguably maybe that they're having the privilege and creating themselves so they can accumulate and scare off retail. And I think like that's kind of what Terra was last week, is an attack on stable coins and just finding ways to put in regulations that favor them. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to see how the not your keys, not your coins ethos spreads, and actually we see even more, like we have seen over the past couple of years, a increase in the amount of coins that are being taken off exchanges. But I'd like to see how that would impact the price and how well that would fight back against the manipulation of futures markets.
It's like that whole old joke of like, hey guys, if we just stop selling our Bitcoin, I bet the price will go up. Huh. Like, if everybody would just not sell, watch what happens. But yeah. And so the enemies of Bitcoin segment, maybe we can make it a segment, but the enemies of Bitcoin, Vitalik coming out and tweeting, let's see. Oh, damn it. I lost the tweet.
This tweet thread wasn't really him as coming out as an enemy. It's revealing that he was an enemy and that maybe he was wrong.
Yeah, I guess that's a better way to view it, to frame it. But he, you know, basically, you to summarize it, he was like, I think I was wrong about a lot of these things, which is really hilarious, because I think I had tweeted and said like, hey, remember that time in Preston Pish's debate with Mark Cuban, whenever Mark Cuban was like, oh, like, I'll just trust Vitalik to figure it out. Like, no, that's the point of decentralization, is that you don't have to trust anybody to figure anything out. And it's kind of funny that the guy at the head of this is like, hey, I might not have made the best decision. What was your takeaway from it, Phil?
Yeah, I'm trying to pull up the tweet thread right now, but it just sounds like in Bitcoin, another thing that sounds too good to be true. I want to know how much of it was actually from Vitalik's volition and how sincere he was, or if it was just like a, not a non-story story, but if it was a distraction from something else.
Yeah.
So I'm always skeptical. Like, it's great, this is how he thinks. And as weird as it might sound, you know, maybe Vitalik isn't a bad guy. Maybe he's just a nerd that actually wanted to make this project, and he rage quit Bitcoin because he wanted to do things his way, and he thought he could achieve that with color coins. And Jimmy Song and others told him that he was an idiot. And so, you know, maybe at the end of the day, humans are still human. People are going to people. They have emotions, and
people are going to people. I love that.
Yeah. Humans are going to human. People are going to people. Like, people are irrational and they make decisions based off of their emotion. And maybe this is him just coming to terms with this out in the open that, yeah, this whole when ETH to 2 weeks TM sometime soon, maybe that's finally getting to him. But then I wouldn't be surprised if this is just another distraction from something else. I am very much I believe that Ethereum has been co-opted by the World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of shit they like. And they like stuff like Ripple. And they don't like Bitcoin because, of course, they can't control it. And it wouldn't surprise me if the people and developers of Ethereum were astroturfed by people like Soros or Schwab or whatever, because that's how they get their influence. They find kind of a grassroots movement based on true principles that individuals believe in, and they basically just get paid off by outside influencers. Influencers.
Well, honestly,
by outside influence, just similar to how the Bcash fork was co-opted by outside arbitrary influence with money and corporate interests like Coinbase, and paying off people that were staunch vocal Bcash advocates.
I think with Vitalik, I was just going to say with Vitalik, like, you know, basically how you're saying he was astroturfed. I see that because he's really smart. Don't get me wrong. In some aspects, obviously he's stupid about Bitcoin, but also I feel like I've seen this story before with like kids in high school or stuff like that, that like were really bright and got taken advantage of by bullies, and you know, they gave the kid things that would benefit them, were able to manipulate them. And I kind of get that vibe from Vitalik, that he's very, you know, manipulatable, and you know, if you just go in, if you're the World Economic Forum or George Soros or whatever, and you go in and you're like, all right, like if I give this kid these things and just agree with his arguments, like, yeah, Bitcoin should do this, Bitcoin should do that, and just give him money and agree.
Yeah,
and
like he was lobbied.
Yeah. And he'll fall right into it. So maybe part of him is sitting there going,
yeah, they appeal to people's emotions and ideals, and then they give them shiny toys or the carrot at the end of the stick, and people go along to get along until they become conscientious objectors eventually.
Yeah.
So maybe saying all that gives Vitalik too much credit, but at the end of the day, maybe he's just some nerd that had an idea for a project. I think he had like very libertarian like values, or at least maybe his dad did. So I heard, kind of like cypherpunk-ish, but it's kind of funny because you bring up like smart kids in school being easily manipulated. But I also, that made me think of, you know, people that are too smart for their own good, and they just have their head too far up their ass, and they fail to realize like the basic principles, because they just think based on their logic and their past experience.
They're like, if I'm right, why
of how their smarts got them where they are today. Maybe they just kind of oversaw what was obviously going on.
Yeah, they pass up on the what's right in front of them because they think they're right. So
exactly,
they think their initial assumption is correct. And I guess to wrap up, you know, just that Coinbase was puking down. Coinbase is worth like a tenth of what it was at its all-time high. So I don't mean to laugh about that for people that lost their money, but it's kind of fitting that
Coinbase, you mean coin, like the ticker.
Yeah, like the stock. I think it's kind of fitting
I think that's just a factor of people fleeing to dollars because Fed rate hikes and uncertainty in the market and supply chains and people firing. And I mean, there was also like a downturn in not only Netflix, like Netflix is firing people, and then like Walmart, because we also had that report of like retail earnings, which was like at an all-time low of like negative 4.25% something or other. I totally butchered that, was not prepared to talk about this for the news segment, but I think it's just like fear and market sentiment. And again, if anything that's Bitcoin adjacent, even people are going to use that to get dollars because it's just so liquid. And it did see kind of a pump and dump thing just because it was tied to Bitcoin. So people are going to flee to dollars in times of uncertainty.
But you should not. You should all keep buying Bitcoin. Remember, you are in that moment. You are currently in 2018 and Bitcoin is only $3,000 and you have that opportunity right now for 4 years in the future. That's what you have right now. You have the opportunity. A tenth of a Bitcoin is only $3,000. Go for it. Cause it's going to be a tenth of a Bitcoin will be worth $30,000 before you know it. But yeah, I think any other topics, Phil, or you tapped out with your news for what you can make simple this week?
I hope I made it simple.
Yeah,
I really did.
We can make
Corey, you have this beautiful way of just like dumbing it down to like where anyone can like get it. It's like, oh yeah, no shit. And I always strive for that, but I think I get lost in my own head and I tend to overcomplicate things. So I try my best to not do that and say the quiet parts out loud as easily as possible. So I hope the listeners appreciate what I try to verbally throw at them.
And, you know, give us feedback, guys. And we will take questions. If anyone ever sends us questions via Twitter, email BitcoinMadeSimplePodcast@gmail.com. Anything like that, we will bring it up if it looks interesting. And even if you're, you know, asking questions about Phil's cat, he can answer them. I think
feedback Corey,
is yeah.
What was your guesstimation for the Bitcoin price?
I think last it was week. Lower than 30.
Lower than 30. All right, I won this one because I guessed 31. And while we were on air about, let's see here. I don't know, like an hour ago or what time is it? Yeah, an hour ago it was 30,003.
So
30,300 or 460. I don't know. So I won this one for once.
All right. So what do you think is going to happen next week? I'm up 2-1, so I'm up. We got to figure out the exact number of sats, but yeah, what do you think? It's right now 30,100. So let's just call it an even 30. Are we going to be above or below 30?
We're just going over under 30. I think, it's a good question. I'm going to guess under 30. I'm going to go bearish on this.
I'm actually going to go over. So I'm over. I've been wrong more than I've been right more than I've been wrong so far. So, but yeah. All right. Well, we'll see who owes the other one money next week. But again, check out the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet from Shift Crypto. Go to shiftcrypto.ch/Bitcoin Made Simple. Use the promo code Bitcoin Made Simple for 5% off. And we will catch you guys next week.